This meeting is being recorded.
Everything you say can and will be used in a court of public opinion.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition comic book podcast, where we discuss the famous, infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
That's me.
That's you.
How's it going, Paul?
It's going good. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It is.
Yeah.
We just had a tornado yesterday. That was great. A tornado in the city. Who knew? Yeah.
That's a new HBO series.
Tornado in the City?
Yeah.
I thought that was a Marvel character.
That's right.
The tornado. You know, there's probably the best part about that is there might be a character that has been created in Marvel or DC called the tornado.
And if there isn't, there is one now.
How is there not then? There has to be, right? There's some obscure issue of the Fantastic Four or Daredevil or Supergirl that features, you know, the tornado.
Wasn't there Red Tornado?
There is Red Tornado, a very underused character currently. I mean, Red Tornado was like kind of, he was like the Martian Manhunter of the Justice League before a Martian Manhunter was the Martian Manhunter of the Justice League.
Now that'll be a topic for discussion. Please, everyone, send us every character that's named Tornado.
Yes, please do.
In comic book history.
And everyone we'll see will be like, oh yeah, that guy or woman.
Or they'll be like, come on, idiots. You must know that this guy exists.
And then we'll do the face palm, you know, the face palm slap, you know.
Exactly. But anyway, enough of this frivolity. Let's talk about some more frivolity. A few days ago, at the time of this recording, the Shang-Chi trailer was released for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And this trailer sort of reinforced that magic is going to be the dominant theme in the MCU going forward. There's been WandaVision, Loki's currently running, Shang-Chi, of course, eventually Doctor Strange, maybe even the Eternals. I don't, you know, who knows what that's going to be, actually. Who knows what that's going to be.
The Eternals shouldn't be magic, right?
I guess not. No, it should be technology. Yeah,
because gods.
Because previously in the MCU, they gravitated towards the whole Arthur C. Clarke adage that magic is technology we don't understand.
Right.
So it's really all science. We just haven't figured it out yet.
Science.
But now that they're established, it seems that they're comfortable just saying, you know, magic is just magic. It's all good, right. Which I am fully on board with.
It's kind of like when Marvel for a while didn't acknowledge that mutants existed.
Well,
own the rights to the X-Men, so there are no mutants.
I fully understand why they did. I mean, just throwing in the idea like, yeah, there's aliens and there's weird technology, but there's also magic and, you know, and sorcerers exist. Starting the whole movie franchise, you know, you start slow, you build up to this sort of thing.
What is this phase? So we're about to enter phase four?
Phase
four. And that's going to start with
We're already in phase four, to be honest.
Oh, are we?
Because the series are considered part of, the TV series are considered part of phase four.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they're all, it's all connected, man.
You know, God bless DC's terrible film history. At least with Marvel, it's kind of frustrating, right? I mean, it's, you must watch every show, every film. And if you miss one, then you're not in the loop. You missed a thing.
That may be the case now. I mean, when it was starting out, you could skip a few things here and there. You didn't need to see everything. But now I think they're just full bore of, yeah, watch everything or you're not with the cool kids.
Give us your money.
And again, I'm fully on board with that too. Keep me entertained. I will give you my money. Well, first of all, let's go back to the beginning. You, Mr. Brian Reese, have literally just watched the Shang-Chi trailer, seconds ago.
About an hour, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes ago.
So, what did you think? What are your initial thoughts? What's your hot take?
I mean, it's a Marvel trailer, right? It's so there's you know, so there's this swelling music throughout the whole thing because we have to know that things are important because this important, you know, overarching, you know, important sounding orchestral music is always playing.
Well, that's that. To be fair, that's movie trailers in general.
I mean, you know, I have no idea what the movie's about. It's a lot of kung fu, right? Or martial arts of, you know, I'm not an expert on martial arts, so I don't know what is kung fu and what is a different discipline.
People are furiously commenting right now.
Yes, yeah, and good for them because they know the difference. And you know, I could talk to you about the difference between Frederick Exley and Breeze Pancake, and that's great. We all have our expertise.
That's right.
But I didn't really catch the magic part of it. I saw shiny stuff.
Well, you have the 10 rings, which okay. Well, first of all, and spoiler for
you're the Marvel expert here. So
spoiler for future episodes. You're gonna know a lot about Shang-Chi coming up. But basically, Shang-Chi is in the comics, he was the son of Fu Manchu. There are multiple reasons why that character is not being used anymore.
We have a lot of this is the part of Marvel history that we don't like to talk about.
It's a very problematic character, not just in Marvel comics, but just in general. So they changed his origins now so that the Mandarin is his father, not Trevor Slattery. The actual real honest. So, I mean, I find that fascinating just to begin with, that Marvel is retconning themselves to say, yeah, this was a funny joke, but we're really going to give you the Mandarin, the actual Mandarin. And they're going to try to do it in a culturally sensitive way. But as you know, in the comics, he has 10 rings, each one with a different power. Looks like in the trailer, those 10 rings are actually bracelets.
Yeah, I caught that whole like bracelet thing, and then they all light up in different colors.
Those are the 10 rings.
I don't want to say that these are infinity rings, which are completely different.
Well, that's I think that's kind of the idea.
Jewelry.
Yeah. If they were just rings, it would say, "Oh, that looks just like an infinity gauntlet." They're bracelets.
But thankfully these are bracelets.
Yeah. Someone did mention because there are dragons. There be dragons. I've heard many people pointed out that it's possible that these are rings, but they're rings for a dragon.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So they're rings that fit on dragon fingers that are actually fit like bracelets on a human being. So that's kind of a cool idea.
She had rings on her fingers and bells on her shoes. You could tell without asking. She was into the blues.
Brian doing a Grateful Dead reference is just a rare occasion. So you have that, but then you also have what looks like Shang-Chi's mother is basically an airbender. So she's doing all this kung fu and then there's windy. Everyone knows it's windy stuff happening. It looks as if they're going to try to combine magic and technology. There's not much information being given in this particular trailer. It's just combined with the fact that you have WandaVision, Loki, Doctor Strange, that this just looks like it's going to fit into that as well.
It really feels like it's moving in there. And, you know, again, part of me wants to, like, do we make a distinction between magic and mysticism? And that's a longer conversation. And again, furiously typing somewhere. furiously typing somewhere someone is.
Thank you, Yoda.
To your point, and I think you're making a really good point, even though I'm hilariously being contrarian. I think a lot of these things, yes, I agree with you. A lot of what Marvel is doing does seem to be moving, you know, again, with WandaVision and Doctor Strange, obviously, and Loki. Loki's weirder because Loki does magic, but is it, it's not the magic that we think it is. I mean, Asgardian magic isn't really the same, right, as sort of earthly magic.
It's been hand-waved away multiple times. Mm-hmm. You know, especially in the Thor movies, it's like, oh yeah, it does magic, but it's sort of technology-ish. I don't know. And they just don't think about it. He just does magic. And the same thing with Doctor Strange in the first movie. It's like, well, is it technology? Is it just harnessing energy? Is it, what is it? And it's just, they literally hand wave it.
And I'm more of a, like, to me, it's like, to me, I like magic as magic. I love Zatanna. The books of magic. Now I realize I'm switching to DC, but you know, both of the major two companies have their stable of magic users. You know, again, John Constantine is maybe the greatest non-magician, right? So, yeah.
Well, he is a magician. He uses magic.
He uses magic, but is he a magician? Ooh, this is, sorry, again, we're weeds. I'm taking us into the weeds. This is a long conversation that maybe we could do if we do a Hellblazer comic.
Cool, that's a tease.
Yeah. Let's go back to what you wanted to talk about rather than me rambling about.
Full disclosure, everybody, we didn't have a topic, so I just said, hey, let's watch the Shang-Chi trailer and talk about magic. That's literally what's written down on my notes. So this is completely off the cuff, and there's no real direction here. I personally, after watching this, I found it very interesting that it seems as if two things that the MCU is trying to do. One is they're just going to fully embrace magic. We have magic now, and people can do spells, and we can do anything we want. And they're going to fully embrace, we have a multiverse now, so we can tell all kinds of different stories. And if continuity screws up, it's a different timeline. Everything's fine. I kind of really like that because it opens up so many more possibilities for telling stories.
Yes.
You know,
I am fully on board with all of this and whatever I made it sound like earlier. No, I think this is really intriguing, and I'm glad that they're going because, you know, like a lot of my favorite characters tend to be magic oriented in comics. So
yeah. Oh, me too. Absolutely. Plus, they keep talking about Nexus beings, so there's got to be a man thing coming, which is taken out of context, really weird thing to say. As we were saying, I love the magical side of comic books, and I find that so deeply entertaining. And to see this being brought into live action, very well made movies and TV shows, this is great. Well, I just wish I was 12 again. Really enjoy this.
No, and I think it really works. I think it works because the MCU, they've done the cosmic thing, right? We've had the big, giant cosmic. We even had a couple nifty spy espionage films, the Captain America stuff, the Winter Soldier and things like that.
Even Iron Man, yeah. So.
Right. And so, you know, I like the fact that, you know, they're like, hey, let's take this into a mystical realm.
Yeah, and now the other thing I really love about this, just in general, that the MCU has become so big that characters like Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch are known by the general public. You know, I have members of my family who don't give a diddly about comic books, but they know who Iron Man is. It's like, this is great.
One of the things I would love to see at some point, I don't know if they'll ever do this, because I think that the Netflix Marvel series that they had, they may feel that covered this aspect of the Marvel universe, which makes me sad a little bit. I would still like to see, so you have these big, you know, the big cosmic thing, you had the, now we're going into the magical and mystical. I still would like to see the street level aspect of the Marvel universe still exist. And we had that with the Netflix series, right? I mean, yeah. It was Jessica Jones, it was Daredevil, it was Punisher, Luke Cage. It still breaks my heart that some of those series were canceled. Some of them probably needed to go away, but my God, Jessica Jones should never have gone away.
Iron Fist, towards the end there, was starting to find its way and starting to get better.
Yeah. Like, oh,
they could have done something with it, but... Yeah.
So while I love that the next wave looks to be sort of more magical and mystical in nature, with some exceptions, I think the Eternals are still going to... That has to be a cosmic thing, more than a magical thing. But there's still part of me that feels like, oh, are they completely doing away with the street level?
I don't,
and we don't know what they have planned down the line, so yeah. I could be wrong.
Now, there are rumors, because we know that there's a Ms. Marvel series coming, so right. She's more street level. I mean, she's got the crazy powers, but, and again, this is just rumor fluctuating wildly around the internet. No, there's going to be there is going to be a She-Hulk series,
mm-hmm.
which has to do with the legal side of things, because she is a lawyer.
Yeah, which would, right.
And the big rumor is that Charlie Cox might come back as a lawyer.
What was
as a
that?
as a particular blind lawyer, actually.
Oh my, huh?
Yeah, that's so that would be a way to integrate him back into the MCU proper.
And I think that would be great.
Yeah, and since there's multiple timelines, you could just say, oh, the Netflix things happened over here on a different timeline, but we can still bring those characters in.
Right, MCU or the, you know, nobody owes me anything. I'm not owed a thing. They're going to do what they want to do. And that's, they're right, because they the dollars support what they're doing. And, you know, but I feel like there has to be some of us out there that miss the street level stuff.
And that's what's so intriguing about this thing with Loki and having all the multiple timelines and the multiverse of madness and all that, is that we could, all these disparate things out there, you can say, well, it is part of the universe. It's just, you know, a different branch, which is cool. I like it.
And I just want to pause. I just want to say, because we've mentioned it, 3 episodes into Loki. Oh, it's good.
Yes, it's good.
I'll leave it there. I mean, we're not here to talk about the Loki series because it is just 3 episodes in.
At the time of this recording, I've been really behind on editing and getting things out on time. So just want to throw that out there real quick about Loki. The 3rd episode, which everyone's calling filler, is still really good.
How is it filler? Oh my God, there's so many reviews in it.
That's what I say. I'm with you on this one. But people being mad on the internet, have you never heard of this before?
Oh, right.
I don't know if you've noticed that there are several people on the internet that have opinions.
Feelings.
Yes. To wrap all this up, because we're straying far afield. You know, I like that the MCU and to a certain extent DC are just fully embracing the weirdness of their medium and saying, yeah, we're gonna have these movies, but crazy stuff happens and they wear weird costumes, and just, you know, get on board and enjoy.
Yeah, but I think it makes for a more interesting film experience too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you're not just using the CGI for smashing buildings or smashing, you know, people or fight scenes, but you can like use that CGI to get really trippy.
Yes. And in the case of Shang-Chi, we have dragons. Hooray.
Yes.
I think this all looks really fantastic. I enjoyed the first iteration of the MCU, and I'm really excited to see. I'm already enjoying the second phase, or the second, how would you call it? They've already done their first part, ended with Endgame, right, and now they're sort of starting up a new storyline. I guess that's it. Do you have anything else to say?
No, I think for an off-the-cuff topic, we went on for a bit.
Yes, we have fulfilled our content quota. Let us take a break. Let us take a break and come back with some Black Widow.
Woo! And we're back. You have recommended a Black Widow run for us today. Would you like to share your feelings about it?
Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow, Marvel's sultry spy. She has a heart of gold, a checkered past, and a particular set of skills. Created in 1964 by Stan Lee, Don Rico, and Don Heck, Black Widow was initially conceived as a villain, but as is the way with Marvel, she was eventually redeemed and made an Avenger. Over the years, she's been a member of several team groups, partnered with the likes of Hawkeye and Daredevil, but it wasn't until the 1990s that she was given solo outings of her own. Several short runs and one-shots would follow, all of which highlighted her, let's say, feminine wiles, alongside her training as an assassin and spy. The Black Widow became a femme fatale, a highly desirable and highly dangerous anti-hero, always walking the line between what is right and what's expedient. In their 2016 run, Mark Waid and Chris Samnee would highlight another feature of Natasha Romanoff, her intellect and cunning. She conceives of plans within plans to deceive, manipulate, and decipher mysteries in order to thwart a multitude of nefarious plans. And of course, she kicks ass while she does so. This 12-issue run, consisting of 2 storylines, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Most Wanted and No More Secrets, follows Natasha as she is forced to deceive S.H.I.E.L.D., seemingly betray her allies, and go on the run to track down an enemy that seems to know all of her secrets. While at the same time, having to defend herself against another Black Widow and attempt to save a group of girls from the same fate that she herself once suffered. The series is highly stylized and propelled by Samnee's dynamic artwork. Long, dramatic, expertly paced action sequences punctuate Wade's tightly plotted story to serve and accentuate just how formidable the Black Widow can be. It's very cinematic. Someone should make a movie of it. In the end, the character of Natasha Romanoff is a complex one, born of trauma, filled with regret, tinged with sadness. She is constantly searching for redemption and acceptance, but never compromises her beliefs to achieve it. Wade and Samnee never forget these key aspects of her, while at the same time delivering an exciting action espionage drama with a badass heroine at its lead. Brian, what did you think of the Samnee Wade run of Black Widow?
I mean, it's a lot of fun, right? It's This is Cold War stuff, which I believe is referenced a few times. Chris Samnee, I mean, my God.
Oh yeah, this is all Samnee all the time.
This is a visual treat in so many ways, which I think in some cases makes up for what may be a slightly thin plot. We can talk about that later, but Chris Samnee is and continues to be one of my favorite contemporary artists. His mix of that sort of cartoon style that I think harkens a little bit to, with certain nods of Darwin, the great and much missed Darwin Cook, he has that stylistic feel to it. He's not the same as Darwin Cook, but he has, I don't want to call it nostalgic, that's not fair to either of those two artists, but he has that sense of wonder, I want to call it, and a nod to the older styles, but yet contemporary in its same way. And I just, there's so much here. Like a lot of the series are long action sequences. Long action sequences.
Well, it begins, the first issue is essentially just one long action sequence with a couple of lines of dialogue. And it's a hell of a way to start off the series. Just basically just throwing you into the action and letting you follow along.
Yeah, my notes for the first issue are basically Black Widow escape S.H.I.E.L.D. That's it. That's my notes.
That's exactly what it is, but there's so much going on.
It's like a James Bond film. You know how like a James Bond film,
right, always has that cold open.
Cold open that is just an extensive long action sequence and it goes on forever. I'm not saying that as a critique. And this is what they do with this. And they have to have had that in mind.
Oh yeah. I mean,
right. Because you flying, you have a helicarrier, you have the flying cars, you have a ground, you know, she lands on the ground and keeps escaping. I mean, it is just a long sequence that's incredibly rendered.
Yes. Oh, there's one part that I absolutely love, just the details of it. She jumps off the helicarrier. There's someone chasing her with a jetpack. Mm-hmm. She has no parachute. So she gets herself maneuvered to steal the jetpack from the guy and pushes him away, giving his face mask a little kiss before she pushes him away and stealing the jetpack. But then later when she's on the ground, that same agent stands up because you can see the lipstick stain on his mask. So you know it's the same guy. It's just little details like that are so perfect. And the action sequences they're framed perfectly, they're paced perfectly. It's really thrilling. Like I said, it's cinematic. You watch it and you're like, oh, this is amazing. I'm very excited because it just like Samnee's art, the way he creates an action sequence, it's a clinic on how to do it right. Really brilliant. I mean, and as far as his style is concerned, it's realistic but still cartoonish. Cartoonish isn't the right word, but
it is cartoony, and I think that's on purpose, that's intentional, and that's there's nothing wrong with it.
It's stunning to look at.
It's okay to call it cartoony because we want to reclaim that sort of word in terms of
we're going to take back the word.
We're taking back cartoon.
Taking it back from the man.
Because this is a good thing.
Yeah, like I said, that first issue is just basically a one extended action sequence.
There's also a great moment. There's the kiss on the jetpack. There's also that great moment where Black Widow is falling and she lands on one of the hover cars, right? And she lands her foot on the eject button. So it sends the shield agent flying off, like with their parachute coming up. But it's this incredible sequence.
Right.
And very incredibly creative. And, I don't know how Wade and Samnee wrote this, whether it was the Marvel way where Wade just let Samnee go at it, or if these are very specifically, these are specific sequences that Wade has plotted out. I don't know, but it's just that wonderful moment where Natasha drops down onto this car and literally just drops her foot right on the eject button.
Yeah. And it's,
it's great.
Yes, it is. And so you get these exciting kind of humorous moments, but then it ends with, she's tired. She's on her knees. Someone comes up behind her. Another agent comes up behind her with a gun and she just kind of sighs and goes, "Oh," because she still has to fight him off. And then she beats him with a rock. It's like, so it goes from this kind of fun, humorous thing to, and that kind of sets the groundwork for how this series is going to be. Yes, it's fun and humorous. Yes, there's going to be a lot of frivolity, but there's also going to be some violence and she's going to beat you with a rock. So you have that violence and visceralness to it as well. It's an incredible way to throw you into this series. And just
it's widescreen.
Exactly. And it's just sort of like, buckle in, get ready for this. In my introduction, I said that Wade had a tightly plotted storyline. That was my nice way of saying thin storylines. It's not that there aren't things going on, but
I didn't mean that as a pejorative.
No. Wade's writing is good. He has a very basic storyline. He knows exactly what he's going to tell. But to me, he seems as if he's just relying on Samnee. It's like, this is my story, but this is really driven by Samnee.
There is a beginning, middle, and end. Well, actually, there's a couple beginning, middle, and ends.
Yeah.
Here's some very humorous writing. I mean, Wade does some, there are very humorous bits here and some Easter egg-y stuff. But so I don't want to, this is a spy espionage thriller. So we do have... Yeah. So I apologize if I didn't mean to call it thin.
No, I'm kind of agreeing with you. I mean, it's not an overly complex story.
This is not Le Carre.
Right, exactly. And this is not a put down to Wade. He's a master of his craft. I mean, he's one of the grand masters of comics at this point. He's been around for a long time. He knows what he's doing. But this is more of a visual story more than it is a narrative story. And again, that's not to say that there isn't a lot going on. I mean, it's not to say that there aren't a lot of things happening.
Comics is a visual medium.
But it's not relying on Stan Lee levels of dialogue.
Yeah. No.
It's very tight. It gets the story across with a minimal amount of narration and dialogue. And that is to its benefit, I think. So the story is, it begins with Natasha Romanoff, Black Widow, stealing something from S.H.I.E.L.D. and seemingly as if she's defecting to another side.
As she's wont to do.
Because she's got some secrets. She's got some red in her ledger, as they say.
Got some history of jumping from side to side.
It seems as if she's defecting or betraying S.H.I.E.L.D. But we know, being good comic book readers, that there's something else. There has to be something else going on. So she is essentially being blackmailed by the Weeping Lion, a criminal that we have never heard of before. Essentially, she has to steal this information in order for some secrets not to be revealed. Is that fair?
She's protecting what we think is protecting herself. She has to get this ledger about the Red Room because the Weeping Lion has secret information about her that she doesn't want to get out. That information is actually more damaging to others than to her. So she's possibly a tad more altruistic than we initially think.
And her ultimate plan is to not reveal any of this. I mean, we find out later that she just wants to play along, basically, in order for none of this information to get out. She's not ultimately successful in that.
Nope.
Along the way, she has to go back to the Red Room, the same same place that she was trained as an assassin and basically brainwashed and forced to become an assassin and a killer. And she finds out that there actually is still a program going on, and there are some girls being trained the same way that she is. In addition to a new protege, recluse, who is sort of an entry-level Black Widow. And there's some really great confrontations between the two. The young recluse, the new Black Widow, essentially trying to prove that she's better. And Natasha just kind of being so tired. It's like, I don't want to have to go through this.
I was going to bring this up later, but now that we're... So the idea is, right, the recluse is the daughter of the headmistress.
Yes.
And the headmistress is the one who trained Natasha as a child. So it's this whole Russian program that, and my knowledge of Black Widow's history is a little sketchy. So I don't know how much of this has existed in Marvel before here, how much of this history is already known and how much of this is new as introduced by Mark Waid.
No, this is so the Red Room and the Headmistress, this is all canon for Black right. Widow.
That was my assumption reading this. So Recluse is the daughter of the headmistress, right? So,
well, real quick, I couldn't quite get a handle on this. Is she really the daughter, like the actual physical daughter, or is she a daughter in the same way that Natasha is considered? You know, like the headmistress calls all of her girls daughters.
Yeah. I think she's the real daughter, partly because we have some flashbacks where we find out that this recluse, her name is Anya, and she's not allowed to participate in this training. She's kept separate. Mm-hmm. And I think Natasha refers to her as her actual daughter because she's like, you're protected by the headmistress. You're not like us because you're the headmistress's daughter. So recluse Anya is not part of the training that the other girls are going through.
That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing something.
That was my read on it.
Okay.
I guess I'll just throw right here. Some of all of this could have been avoided if Natasha wasn't a complete dick. Not just when they were kids. Even throughout this story, Natasha treats this woman first as a girl, as children, and then as women with utter contempt and treats her like shit and insults her at every level.
I don't think it's contempt. I thought it was, I took it as Natasha was trying to like push her away and say, no, you can't follow me. You can't be like me. Being like me is the wrong. Anyway, she was trying to squash the hero worship by being a terrible person.
I don't know. I mean, I think my read was different on that. And particularly as it carries forward, there were numerous moments, like as adults with Natasha and Anya, the Black Widow and recluse, where Natasha could have just not poked the bear or poked the spider, as it were, but yet she continued to just absolutely denigrate her at every step. You know, I mean, maybe that's my snowflake reading. Part of me, like reading through this is like, wow, if you just didn't say that one thing that you didn't need to say, you know, maybe things would have gone differently.
I could see that. Like I said, I saw it as, you know, she's just trying to make herself unappealing so that the person following in her footsteps wouldn't just change and not want to be like her. Regardless, you are correct that, you know, some of the conflict could have been toned mitigated down a bit. Yes. We then find out who the White Lion is, who turns out that, yeah, because we think that the Weeping Lion is this big hulking guy in a mask, but it turns out the Weeping Lion is actually a young kid, kind of a teenage boy who happens to have telekinetic powers and is controlling this larger man, which is his uncle?
His cousin. Actually,
his cousin.
The Weeping Lion is, I don't think he's a kid anymore. He would be about the same age as Natasha, because she, when she did this, what you're referring to, the assassination, they were about the same age, remember? So even though he looks diminutive.
Yeah, that's just, what I, yeah, he's, he comes across.
Kind of a skinny geek, as opposed to, he's not a kid. He's the same age as the, as his cousin, who was the son of, well, now we're getting ahead of ourselves. But yeah. He's not a kid.
No, you're right. But the way he's depicted is very adolescent. He has at least his mannerisms and his attitude is very.
But if we're following the timeline, he should be the same age.
No, you're right. Well, Natasha's very, very old too. She has, you know, it's part of her story that she takes the same serum as Nick Fury, which keeps them young.
You know what? That's a good point, and that makes things a little even screwier.
Yeah,
they should be the same age, but this kid hasn't aged, or the primary antagonist that's not recluse should be the same age as Natasha, but since she has the serum, and you know, she's referred to as
old lady.
You know, everyone else has grown old around her, and she hasn't. Shouldn't the weeping lion be older?
Yeah. See, I pictured him as sort of a late teen.
Yeah, but he shouldn't be, right?
I didn't actually think about this.
Pardon us, folks, but I think we may have found a continuity error.
Yeah. Hang on one second. So, after some little bit of research and talking off mic, Brian and I have come to the conclusion that the Weeping Lion, he is actually a grown-ass man.
He's a grown-ass man.
Yeah, but he's depicted as looking very young. I think that's what threw me off.
Kind of an angsty teenager.
Right, and that's kind of what his attitude is and what his personality is, sort of an angsty teenager. I guess that threw me off as I was reading it. Regardless of what his actual age is, he acts like an angsty teenager. So basically, he can read people's minds, and he tries to blackmail people, specifically Natasha, using this information that he gleans from their memories, which is an interesting little superpower. He can also blow up people's heads with his mind, which, you know, comes in handy.
Which may come back to haunt him later. So to clarify, there's some convoluted stuff going on, because there's a list. There are people who want one list, and then there's another list that somebody else has that are using that list to blackmail the person with the list. But everybody wants one list, but then there's the other list. Me, you know what I'm talking about, right? I feel like we're in a Raymond Chandler. You know, it's like.
But what it comes right down to is what Natasha is more concerned with is it reveals that there are now new girls being trained in the Red Room to become Black Widows. Yeah, so that becomes her new mission, is to save these girls, so to get them out of this program and into protective custody where they can be de-brainwashed and live normal lives. It becomes her mission because if she can save these girls, she's essentially saving a part of herself. And that's pretty deep stuff because this comic like kind of lightly breezes over that. It talks about it, but it doesn't get really deep into the psychology that's behind it.
I think by the end of the comic, Wade was perhaps wrapping things up early.
Again, I was going to get to that too. I thought that the ending was a little bit too quick.
Essentially, what we have is we have a couple different factions that Black Widow has to deal with, right? She's the Weeping Lion wants the list of all of the people who were part of the Red Room initially, like the headmistress and Black Widow as a child, and all of those Russian, the children that were being formed into like Russian super soldiers or assassins or whatever. Weeping Lion wants that. Through that, in a way that's not related, is then when Black Widow discovers that there's now a Dark Room that we think is unbeknownst to Weeping Lion. Am I getting that right?
Yes, but it actually turns out that Weeping Lion has been subtly manipulating this.
So these are kind of the two disparate plot lines that are intertwining that we don't quite see for several issues. And we think we're dealing with two separate plot lines that kind of crash into each other at the end.
Yes, these two plot lines seem to be separate, but they actually are intertwined. But it does allow for a couple of really good set pieces. One is the new Dark Room trainees. The new murder girls. The NMGs are sent to to the White House to try to assassinate the vice president. And Natasha disguises herself as a tour guide to try to figure out which one of these girls on a school trip.
A remarkably incompetent tour guide, which is a very funny sequence.
Yes, it is an incredibly funny sequence.
Well done by Wade there.
Yeah, that's an incredibly well done sequence as well. It's funny, but it's, you know, and then there's a nice, I guess it's previous. Is it previous to that where she goes and visits Iron Man?
Yeah, it's previous to that. So
yeah, we're jumping all around here. Yeah.
So because Natasha, so what happens, right, is that this list that she's supposed to procure for Weeping Lion, it ends up in the hands of the headmistress because of reasons. Recluse and the headmistress, who are not really part of this, like her visit to the old Red Room, or now the Dark Room, is antecedent to the other part of the plot at this point. She just discovers that this is happening, so she goes there.
No, Weeping Lion sent her on this path in order for her to discover this.
Yeah. So she gets the list, then the headmistress and Recluse take it from her, and then she confronts the headmistress and Recluse, and they're both like, we don't need this anymore. Here, you can have it. Because you're wounded, we're not going to go after you right now because there's no honor in killing a spider who has lost a few of their legs. So she goes to give the list to the Weeping Lion, or we think she is.
But it's really a setup where she's working with a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who's been following her. Not working right. with, essentially, but she's being tailed and knows she's being tailed.
And then we have this kind of unfortunately toss-off S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who we're supposed to believe is a big deal at the beginning, Elder, yeah. who basically gets shunted off the board pretty quickly. And
he blows himself up. He got blown up real good.
This gets blown up and does not end up in the hands of Weeping Lion. Weeping Lion then releases all of the
damning information.
The damning information that he had had on her, and which gets to Tony Stark. All this information is leaked out, and Tony Stark learns that Professor Johansson, who is the one that helped him build his armor when he was captured, Tony Stark finds out that Natasha was the one that kidnapped or set up the kidnapping and abduction of him that sent him back to China.
This is before she became a good person. There's a really, I think this is an excellent scene myself. After a fight, she's injured. She's on the phone, talking to someone. The phone itself isn't encrypted. So Tony Stark, as Iron Man, picks up on this, discovers her location, and goes to get her.
He's real mad.
He's real mad, but finds that she's terribly, terribly injured. So he says, this is in Paris, by the way. I have an office here in Paris. Of course I do. Let me take you there. You can get some rest. Takes her in, does a scan to try to figure out what her injuries are, and then says, wait, you're not injured at all. She then knocks out Tony Stark and gains access to all his files. I mean, I think that's a great scene of her, you know, using all of her skills as a spy. She's
and
acting,
knowing that she's yeah. calling on an unencrypted phone. There's the funny bit where she's like, some poor person in New York is going to get a voicemail that's not going to make any sense to them.
Exactly. So she called a random number and just left us very long. It's a good way of showing how Natasha is actually quite smart and knows her business really well, and knows the superhero game as well, knowing exactly how Tony Stark would react. It's a good character moment for Natasha.
And there are quite a few of those.
So then stuff starts to come together really quickly. I don't know if this series was supposed to go on or if it was just meant to be a 12-issue run.
Well, who can tell with Marvel, right?
It seems to me as if this gets wrapped up really quickly. Because it seems to be going at a very slow, not slow pace, but it's very methodical about getting into one situation, then another, having these action set pieces, and then suddenly, boom, we're wrapping things up pretty quick.
So I think, Natasha uses this information, right? She uses the information to get from Tony Stark to hunt down the Weeping Lion. And then she beats the crap out of the kid who's should be an adult her age.
Let's not get back into that again.
Right. And so then they're like, So she makes him his little bitch. And so she uses him for a variety of things where she's trying to hunt down the dark room. So now we're forgetting about this list that she was originally supposed to get. And, you know, we're forgetting about the big reveal that she did all these terrible things as Black Widow that they leaked out. And now it's a buddy movie with her and Weeping Lion, like, dippy-doing around.
Yeah, with her trying to get information in order to find out the location of these girls so that she can get them to safety.
Right. So, yeah, because we've shifted from this list and the Weeping Lion as the big bad to the dark room and rescuing the kids.
Yes.
And, yeah.
But Weeping Lion has actually, unbeknownst to everyone, he's the one who captured these girls and has them under lock and key, basically.
Right. With his cousin, who, as we saw in this flashback that we referred to earlier, with Natasha's first kill, it was the Yugoslavian. We don't know what his name is. But anyway, she kills this guy. She thinks she kills one of the kids in the car with him. She doesn't know that the other kid is in the back seat. So it's the two kids that were in the car with the Yugoslavian that become Weeping Lion. And then this hulking beast that Weeping Lion controls via his telepathy. I mean, they're cousins.
What it comes down to is Natasha just needs to, at this point, find out where the girls are. At the same time, Recluse is trying to enact some revenge upon her. And she's also trying to get the girls. Right. So she's trying to become the new headmistress. We then have a quick, brief little jaunt to the moon.
This is the most absurd.
It is a little far-fetched. They need someone who can see the entire Earth and figure out where these girls are.
Right, but before this, so she finds out Bucky, Winter Soldier, has been following her this whole time and, like, secretly protecting her and keeping an eye on her, right? So she finds this out, and then Bucky is suddenly like, Nick Fury wants to talk to you.
Yeah, Nick Fury at this point is the Watcher because of a previous Marvel crossover, which don't want to get into.
Thanks, Jake Aaron.
But Nick Fury killed the Watcher and has to be the Watcher at this point. So he's chained up on the moon, and oh my God, comic books.
I mean, so then they jettison off to the moon, right? And it's Bucky, because of course, because then they have to stump.
They don't stump.
Well, might as well have.
Hold on. She has to reveal that she has feelings, and, you know, she's not on her own. It's crucial to the character development that she realizes that she's not on her own and that she has friends.
But Bucky's basically, in the previous issue, he's like, hey, you know, Nick Fury wants to talk to you on the moon. And then they're like, okay, well, here we go up to the moon. Of course, they bring Weeping Lion along.
Who has a girl in a duffel bag.
Who has a girl in a duffel bag.
I mean, as you do.
This is before everybody gets excited. This isn't Women in Fridges.
But he tries to smuggle a tiny assassin up to the moon,
which is one of the girls from the dark room. So then they're just dippy doing about on the moon, and they run into Nick Fury. And this is what's weird about all this. So we have this buildup about Weeping Lion, the telepath, and his cousin who he controls, who's this big hulking whatever. So correct me if I'm missing something on this. So she's like talking to Nick Fury as the Watcher, and of course he's not really responding. It looks like he's doing something with his feet. But meanwhile, Weeping Lion, like, somehow breaks the bonds of this dampening collar, because of course he has a dampening collar for his telepathy. You know, he just looks at Nick Fury and he's like, hey, I want all this information. And Nick Fury just gives it to him and then blows his hat up. Boom, Weeping Lion's gone, just like that.
Yeah. So Weeping Lion, I mean, well, his one of his things is he always wants more information. He wants to see people's secrets, so he tries to see the Watcher, Nick Fury, tries to see his secrets, but there's just too much. And it's an information overload, basically.
Right. And but Nick Fury gives it to him. I keep referring to him as Nick Fury. Obviously, it's not.
Yeah, but, he is Nick Fury.
He just looks at him and is like, here you go. And then just blows his head up. And there goes Weeping Lion.
Well, there's one threat down. and after a convoluted escape of the moon, basically. Well, no, I say convoluted. That's not true. Natasha does act selflessly by giving her air supply, which is, you know, easy listening album.
One should never give anybody the air supply.
It turns out that she was all out of love. She was so lost without him. she gives all the rest of her air to Bucky so that he can make it back to the ship in order to get home safely. He, of course, rescues her. They make it back to Earth. And saves one of the little assassins. So that whole thing is taken care of.
I've got binders full of assassins and duffel bags.
But they did actually get the information that they needed from Nick Fury Watcher. They find out where the girls are, which leads to the final confrontation between the recluse as the new headmistress and the new assassins, the new Black Widows. Natasha is able to overcome their programming by just being selfless and treating them with kindness.
Yeah, and it's actually one of those clever scenes. So, right, so what happens is they end up at this S.H.I.E.L.D. facility in Antarctica that's called Friendship. And within this facility is the ability to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. It's basically it's the old nuclear warhead thing where, you know, you have to have three people or however many people, everybody has a key. The keys have to be turned at the same time, right? The S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that have been here, you know, they get invaded by the dark room child assassins who are trying to get these keys so that they can turn these keys at the same time. And then if they turn these keys at the same time, it destroys everything about S.H.I.E.L.D., leaving everybody out in the cold. So what happens is, of course, right, recluse, these girls end up with all of the keys. And so they're sitting there waiting to turn the keys. And so Recluse says, you know, tells Black Widow, you can stop this by shooting one of them because all six keys have to be turned at the same time. And it's all like they have to be right at the same time. And, you know, of course, Recluse is like, you know, at the stroke of at 12, they're going to turn the keys at the same time, but you have to shoot one of them in order to stop this. So she's making Black Widow choose to take a life of one of these young girls to save S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, a Sophie's choice.
So, right. And of course, and this is actually pretty clever. This is right out of spy espionage stuff. So, you know, Black Widow shoots the clock. Yeah. That's very clever plotting. They can't turn the keys at the same time because they don't have a timer and they forgot their cell phones.
And then, of course, the reveal that Recluse was perfectly fine with killing one of the kids and right. Widow wasn't. The girls turn and decide to side with Natasha, which is all very clever. I thought that was good. And they follow her because of kindness, which, you know, because of friendship. You make a joke about that, but it's actually because of friendship. You could actually say friendship is magic.
What ship are we on, Paul?
It's the good ship, Friendship. No, it's we're making fun of this. And to be honest,
this is a good comic. I love this comic. This was a great comic.
And we're, you know, we were kind of like all over the board, kind of having fun, making fun of sort of some of the middle convoluted stuff. But overall, right, when you're reading this, it doesn't feel complicated. It all flows very, very nicely all the way through.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the hell out of this comic.
Yeah, me too.
But it's also comics. And at the end of the day, it's like, just wait till we get my recommendation later. You want to see something?
Yes. I really like this. There's and by the way, it ends quite nicely with Natasha. They're saying it's time to come in out of the cold, and she agrees. Mm-hmm. It's very clever. Start trusting people again.
Wraps around from an earlier conversation she had with a character we haven't talked about, but it's someone that she knew from back in the day, where he's like, it's time to come back into the cold. And then at the end, it's literally, they're like, she had to come back into the cold. And then at the end, they're like, come back out of the cold.
That's what I mean. Wade knows his craft really well.
Yeah.
He has he sets things up and actually pays them off at the end, which is nice. But this is, there haven't been a lot of Black Widow solo stories, at least there have been more in the last few years than there were in decades.
Right. I mean, she's been featured prominently here and there. I mean, she's been
Oh, no, no. She's always part of a team. She's, I mean, she was, there was Daredevil and Black Widow. That was a team up book for years through the 70s.
Yeah.
So she, I mean, she's always been around, but as far as just her own storylines, you know, her own solo stories, her own series.
Right.
They're few and far between. And like I said, there's more now than there ever have been.
I wonder why.
Well, she's become a prominent character in the Marvel world. But earlier in the 90s, those they're good. Don't get me wrong. There's some good Black Widow stories, but they were very 90s. And they focused a lot on her sexuality rather than her abilities. So stories now that have been being told, now this one, Kelly Thompson has done a run. Marjorie Liu does Monstrous?
Yes.
Well, she did a short series. And so yeah, I mean, in the last few years, stories being told about Black Widow have become really quite good, and they're expanding what they can do with her as a character, and I've been enjoying it. And as for this particular one, man, Wade tells a nice straightforward story, but Samnee nails it. This is Samnee's jam right here.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, I mean, like you said, it's a great story. It's got
some twists and turns. It's got some good set pieces.
Stuff, kind of the noir-y stuff that we like, but yeah, I mean, it's Samnee. I just can't even talk about the art enough. So
yeah, you don't even have to read it. You could just flip through the pages, and yeah, it's an exciting story just from.
Well, there's pages and pages and pages where no reading is required and no reading is presented.
It's true. Now this, I like this one. That's why I recommended it.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. I had not read this before now, so I'm really glad I did. And again, it's the silliness that we talked about aside, it was a lot of fun to read.
So that's it for Black Widow. I highly recommend it. If you haven't read it, please go out. There's a complete, all 12 issues are collected in the Black Widow by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. Read it. It's good stuff. But next time on an all-new edition of the Collected Edition, we'll be reading something from the recommendation. We'll be reading a recommendation from...
Sounds like me trying to do this.
I know. We'll be reading a recommendation from Brian Reese. Brian, what are we going to read?
Oh, we're going to have some fun. We are going to have some fun for our next topic, our next Collected Edition, which actually won't be a Collected Edition because I couldn't find a good Collected Edition. Oddly enough, of this series, we're going to be reading G.I. Joe, The Real American Hero, written by Larry Hama.
Stop. Hama time.
The original run. And we're going to be reading issues 1 through 21. And I know that seems like an odd number, but we can't do it without reading issue 21.
Do you actually read issue 21?
Well, one does not read issue 21, but we'll talk about that in 2 weeks. So we are going to dive deep into the military industrial complex.
Yay.
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe. I am actually excited about this. I was telling you off mic that my knowledge of G.I. Joe is limited. So I'm actually very excited to dig into this and beef up my knowledge of the real The real American hero.
The real American hero.
All right. So that's going to be fun. So that's it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. As always, we would like to hear your feedback and tell us what you think about this comic and tell us what you think about how excited you are for G.I. Joe next time. And don't forget, please take us to school on all the characters named Tornado.
Yes. Yes, please.
Yeah. So visit our website at collectededitionpodcast.com, where you can leave comments on individual episodes or go to our Twitter, Collected Ed Pod. That's Collected EDPOD. And you can, you know, we'll just do all the Twittery stuff. Okay. Thanks again for everyone for listening. Until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy-O production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.